So, Teeny Beans and Blue Jeans, it's the podcast for whatever day today is. And greetings and salutations, I'm McCowan, and that's Shannon over there shaking his head.
You don't even know what day it is anymore. You don't even know what day it is anymore.
It's somewhere, it's a weekday. That's all that really is important. And we have commenced now officially the playoffs, Shannon. Is that,
yes.
are we,
yes.
What was the thing before? Was that playoffs too?
That was the NHL's version of a mini regular season of 24 teams to get down to 16. Now we're into the Sweet 16.
That is not an explanation of any kind. Did the Leafs lose a playoff round? Let me phrase it that way.
Well, let me put it this way. No, they didn't, but the stats count.
All right.
They didn't lose a playoff round. They lost a qualifying round.
I'm finished asking you any questions. Here's our friend John Davidson, who knows the answers to all of these things. JD, did Columbus beat, your former guys, beat the Toronto Maple Leafs in a playoff round? Yes or no?
Not officially in a playoff round. They beat them in a play-in round.
Oh.
So they beat them in a round, so they jumped into the playoffs. It's a tad complicated, guys.
You think? Well, there's all kinds of ways they could have done this, and I'm not here to criticize them. I don't know whether there's any criticism valid here. But it's different from what the NBA has done. It's, Major League Baseball is just starting, sort of. Did you like this idea? Was this the right idea in your opinion, JD?
Yeah, I think it was. Very complicated. And first of all, everybody had to agree that they had to find some kind of a format to be able to get back to playing hockey. So they had to figure a way to build a bubble or two to try to get everybody in and be as safe as possible. And that took probably 3 weeks prior to getting there of testing this and that, and this and that, to going to the rink to your training center, right home, nowhere else. And essentially they got all these different teams into two different cities, Edmonton and Toronto. And thankfully for Canada, because they're way ahead of most other places regarding the safety of it all. And it's worked. I was in the Toronto bubble, not for long. We got swept by Carolina, but it was really good. And I haven't heard a complaint from anybody regarding how good a job the Players Association, along with the NHL, they got together, made this thing work. It's quite a remarkable story.
So what was the bubble like? When you stayed at the Royal York, what was it like?
Quiet. It was, you had to take temperatures every day. You had to get tested every day. It was wonderful because there was no lineups or anything along those lines. You had your own area. Basically, you had your own floor for your team. And then you had your own area that you went for meals, things along those lines. The professionalism of everybody involved inside the place was good. No cash, no money changing hands, because you don't want that. So you had to use credit cards or your credit card on file, things along those lines. To go to a game, there was a walkway underneath, right by Union Station, by the train station, and they had it marked where you walk, where you're socially distanced. You had to wear the masks, the whole thing. And I'm telling you, and they rotated locker rooms, dressing rooms for the teams. They had suites halfway up the building where the team personnel stayed in. You had to wear your mask there. The whole thing. It was complicated for them to put it together. But it worked, and I'm hearing the same stuff in Edmonton.
Now, I'm curious, could you walk around the hotel?
Yes.
You could, huh?
They didn't want you to do a lot of that the first few days because they wanted to make sure when you were in there and you stayed safe and socially distanced and you're tested every day, then you could slowly start to move around a little bit. You go down and have a glass of wine, whatever you want to do, but only with the people that are in the hotel itself. The only time you got out of the bubble was to get on a bus to go over to the practice facility that the Leafs use. And there was a number of different sheets of ice there. So all the teams could do that. But you had to get off the bus. There was police officers there, go directly in. When you came out, you had to go directly onto the bus. They even had plastic sheets behind the driver away from the passengers on the bus. So we'd get on the bus driver would get on, he'd pull these plastic sheets and isolate everybody in the back of the bus, and away you went to back to the hotel, directly back to the hotel.
Wow.
It was, they covered all the bases. They did a heck of a job.
So what happened to your team?
Yeah. Pardon me?
What happened to your team?
We won the lottery, number one. to be honest, we expected more. I mean, we just did. Our best players didn't play real well. Some of our young players played pretty well. We had a number of players first time in a playoff type game, and they had their eyes opened up. We had four guys injured going in, which didn't help. Most teams were pretty healthy going in. And I'm including Jesper Fast, who was hurt 2 minutes into the first game. Right. But we expected more. Very disappointing, to be bluntly honest with you. However, as we flew back the next day to New York, went to the office the following day, and that was the first day of our next season. So we picked the positives, tried to figure out what happened, and we moved forward. That's all there is to it. Then we got real lucky with the lottery.
What were your expectations going into this series? I think you had to feel like it wasn't going to be easy. Expect what happened, yeah, but
for sure. You know, our record against Carolina during the regular season was 4-0. So we knew that we'd done pretty well in that respect. Early, our goaltending was why. In the last couple of games, we were good. Mm-hmm. Now, when you analyze post-series, they had 14 people or 14 players on that team that had played in the Final Four last year. We didn't have any, hadn't been in the playoffs the previous year. So I think it was a learning experience for, I think, 12 or 14 of our guys for the first time. So that's in their back pocket now. Carolina is a good team, a very good team, actually. They're big. They played well. They've got some tremendous young players in Aho and Shveshnikov. However, we were bad. Real bad. So I think if you balance that out, maybe they were better than us, but we could have been a lot better and made it a lot tougher on them.
I want to jump in here, John, just real quickly, because JD said something that I find really interesting, and I don't think we address this often enough. This notion of playoff experience, mm-hmm. and what it actually means. Can you help define that for the average person who may be watching or listening to this? What is that about?
Yeah. Well, you know, my reserve there is to go back on my own experience. My sure. first year in St. Louis as a Blues player, when I was drafted by the Blues, our first playoff game for me as a 19-year-old was in Pittsburgh. And we got beat, if I remember correctly, 3-2. They scored a late goal on me. I'm telling you, the whole thing was weird. It was new. It was, and this is a long time ago. This is in 73, 74. The whole concept of how you get ready for the playoff games, the coaches pay more attention, the media jumps on it, just everything was there. And I hadn't seen that as an NHL player. I was directly out of junior hockey. I played junior in Calgary, went directly to the NHL, and then played in a playoff game. I know the next time I got into the playoffs, and it was as a Ranger, I had been traded after the following season, I knew what to expect. It was a whole different world. I love the playoffs. I found the playoffs as a player easier to play than a regular season game because there's just hockey. There's just hockey. Everybody does everything for you. You don't have to do it. You don't have to lift a finger. They bring food to you. Your wife does all this, all that. It just play. And I found it, and you don't have to get emotionally ready because it's easy to get emotionally ready for playoffs. But I think everybody needs to go through. And then if you look at a lot of the good teams the last few years, they've all lost before they've won. Mm-hmm. A classic example would be Washington. They went through beatings in the playoffs and then learned how to win and became winners as their players matured.
So it would be fair to say to suggest to you that one of your frustrations is not that you didn't win the Stanley Cup, was you didn't get your team into the next round till they experience more of this?
Absolutely. Even a win or two, John. Even a win or two, as opposed to walking out and say, what happened? And now the last couple of days, we've had our Zoom meetings with all our players as they've been dispersed all over the world. And a lot of them made comments that we weren't very good the first couple of games, didn't feel right. Third game felt pretty good. Why was that? We have to dissect that and figure out that kind of stuff going forward. However, there may never be something like this again. There's no normal in the world right now. None. Right. Zero. I said to our guys going in, I said, I don't know what to expect. You could have 7-0 games. You could have 1-0 games. Your team might play well. Your team might not. This is weird because we've never had any circumstance like this before. But I believe in something like this where we didn't play well. We've got to pick the positives. Brett Howden, a young player. Kapo Kapo, a young player. They played very well. We were happy with that. So you find the positives and you move forward.
Okay, so your biggest dilemma, I would suggest, might be in goal. You have three really good goalies.
Yep, and we're going to have two next year. So we have to figure out what we're going to do. And we've started that process of talking things over within our own group, of talking things over with the goalies themselves. I know Henrik Lundqvist has had probably a Hall of Fame career. And he's older. He and I have had a private discussion about the future, and it was put on pause. We're going to talk down the road here and figure some things out. So we have to get to the point where we know we're in this build. We have to understand we're going to have two next year. We have to figure out how we're going to do that. You know, one thing about Hank is Don Meehan is his agent. He's a good man. So, and they've had a great relationship all the way through. So we're going to work through this thing as a group.
Well, it raises this point for me. You know, you're talking about the success, essentially, of this isolation plan that the NHL put in place and which will be in place for the balance of these playoffs. And now the suggestion is that a new season will start in December. Will it? Won't it? Well, I don't think any of us know the answer to that question. But having said that, it raises this issue. Is it even possible to do what you guys just did for a few weeks for an entire season?
Oh, boy, that's a hard question. I really don't see it myself. I mean, this is some sacrifice by everybody to make this thing work. And that sacrifice started before the players and coaches and trainers and staff even got to Toronto and Edmonton. I will say that Canada, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, has done a wonderful job with the commitment by the people across the country. It's a much smaller population, of course, but they've done their part. I think Canada will be in good shape by the time we get to December or January. The United States is a different story. It's become so such a political football that you're not quite sure where we're going to go. Maybe the answer is if we all get lucky and get the vaccine, and we know that it's a vaccine that's going to work, then that's going to be very helpful as we get this thing going. One thing about our sport compared to others, even though the TV is important, of course, but it's driven by the seats by the fans in the seats. We need right. people in the building, and we need the enthusiasm of the people in the building too. Even though I will say that being at those games and watching on television from within the bubble, the crowd noise popped in a little bit. I'm used to it. I think it's pretty good. I thought the soccer league over, and I believe it was Germany did a great job with that, pumping the crowd noise in, watching it on television. I quite enjoyed it. It seems somewhat normal at least. But going forward, I do know that with the leadership of the league, they'll be very patient, try and figure it out, and make strong decisions. There's people's health at stake. It's just what it is.
So when you look at what the cap is going, one of the things that we haven't talked about is there's a new collective bargaining agreement. There's good new rules and regs for you. You're in your Zoom calls with your staff. You're now talking about a flat cap, and that obviously changes your thought process.
And a flat cap going forward too. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one to figure out, with the free agency for these guys that are going to possibly become free agents that are great players. What is their world going to consist of for middle of the road players who are going to be free agents? What is their world and term of contract and amount of dollars consist of? So you really have to try to balance this whole thing and figure it out. It's not going to be what it was. You're not going to project a salary cap of going up $3 million a year anymore. You can't do it. It's just not going to happen. So you have to really dig through the whole thing. You're also going to have the Seattle club coming in, so there's going to be an expansion draft. All this stuff has to be projected. Contracts that are in place. That's just what they are. You got to work around it. There's some teams, as you study the cap situation per team, there's some teams that are going to have to make some tough moves. There's no question.
All more reason to have a quality star player coming to your team on an entry-level contract. Right?
That might be helpful. That might be helpful, yeah. but remember, if you sign a hypothetically number one pick overall,
well, you have that. It's not hypothetical. Have that.
Well, I said sign. If you do, remember there's bonuses in there. That there's the A bonuses, B bonuses, sure. And those numbers are pretty high. So that goes onto your cap. It becomes very interesting with all that stuff. But when you're picking number one overall, you're pretty comfortable with having to work your way around that.
And you're not prepared to tell us who that player is yet?
No, we haven't finished our meetings yet. We haven't had the Zoom calls. You know, one thing I will tell you is that we went for, well, I don't know, 3 weeks at least of doing Zoom calls every day with the kids in the draft. Lafreniere, we never Zoomed with him. We didn't during that time frame simply because we think we had a snowball's chance, you know, where of getting the guy. It's going to be very interesting.
See, we need some news. We're doing these podcasts. We need some news. You're supposed to tell us who the guy is so Bob can tweet it out, and then we can get some news.
I'd like to keep my job, too. So, there's some very good players, though, at the top.
Yeah, the New York Rangers will draft Claude Themelfachuk, whose brother, Orest, is one of our closest friends. And that's all you need to know.
Okay.
Can I flash back to something else? Because I don't think we've talked about this at all. And this is kind of stuck in my craw a little bit in watching these play-in games or whatever the hell you call them. Home ice advantage. Always something that was important, that teams played 82 games in a regular season, ostensibly, yes, to get in the playoffs, but then you want that home ice advantage. And what's it about? It's about familiarity. It's about the crowd. It's about being with your families, not being necessarily in hotels, although some teams did put their clubs in hotels during the playoffs. We know that. What was the absence of that like, John?
I thought it was tough because some games, when they're the great games that they are, you love that intensity in a building. As a player, again, I'm going back. Home ice in the playoffs at Madison Square Garden was unbelievable.
No, electric. Yeah.
It would shake. The building would shake. It was wild. The only thing that's good that works here, knowing who the home ice team is, and it's the higher seed, obviously, is you still, if you're the home team finally, say that you're Columbus, and in the third game you're the home team, you at least get your matchups.
Yeah, so you get your last change. Yeah.
And that's really important if the other team has an Austin Matthews or something like that. And it's not only Tortorella built a line with Foligno and Jenner and Nyquist to play against Matthews and that terrific line. And they also had the defensemen of Werenski and Jones. So it was a five-man unit. And if you have the last change, that's very helpful. Very helpful. That was the one thing that I think makes a difference through these playoffs, but the fans not being there was interesting. The other thing that was interesting was when you sat up in your suite watching, I had never heard the benches like this before. You can really hear the players yelling and lobbying for penalties and screaming after their team threw a big hit and all this stuff, or somebody's mad at somebody. A little coarse, of course, but it was... As a player removed for a long time, to hear that again, I felt, I mean, that's pretty interesting. You see how, and you could sense the intensity of the game without fans by what the benches were doing, because you were kind of worried about how it was all going to work.
Well, one of the intriguing things to me was, as a former player, I'm more interested from this perspective for you. You're used to putting on a certain colored uniform when you're at home and a certain colored uniform when you're away. and the players in the midst of a very fast game are looking at each other and are recognizing. Just, do you think that impacted on, if you were wearing home uniforms, even though you're playing in a neutral environment with no fans, did that make any difference?
No, I think they got used to it quick. I really do. They even got used to the fact that they were in different locker rooms. I mean, your home locker room, you might be in the Raptors room. Mm-hmm. You know, you're supposed to be the home team that night. Or you might be in the, imagine playing the Leafs and you're in the Leafs room and they're in another room.
Yeah.
The whole thing was just sort of, that's what I meant by nothing's normal. This is all strange. But the attitude we tried to sell with our group was, if we get into this play-in round by the league, so be it. If we don't, so be it. If we go to the bubble and there's something you don't like, come and talk to myself or our general manager, Jeff Gordon. Nobody whine, nobody bitch. Just don't, okay? Because yeah. This is a group of people trying to do the best they can to put something together that they've never done before. And so I don't want to hear nitpicking and whining and complaining, period. If it works, it'll be because people cared enough to try to make it work.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that I think everybody bought into that really early, not just the Rangers. I think every team bought into that early, and I think that really set the tone.
Yeah, I think once, John, that it got finalized, there was people over in Europe, players over in Europe, do I go back? Some players might be in a country that's in pretty good shape. Do I go back to the United States and have to go through this process and worry about the virus, et cetera? I credit the players. When they got back here, the majority of them, the high percentage of them, did the right thing. There's a few that had some issues, but it was early enough that they could quarantine, get through things. And then when the official bubble started, we were in pretty good shape. It took a commitment by people to do that. I know our testing at our training center was a big number because players were getting tested towards the end every single day and with a private company. But we had to do it and felt good and strong about it. We had to come in a certain entrance of the training center. We had to wear masks. We had to get our temperature taken immediately by a health personnel. It's just how it worked. But they did it. They all did it.
Well, lots to be said for you commended Canada for what they did. New York State really led the way in so many ways. And so that whole education of what Governor Cuomo did, I think probably had an impact on what the Rangers did.
This state here, in particular New York, got slammed at first because when the virus, and they say originated in China, went to Europe, and then with all the travel between the two countries, people come into New York from all over Europe, and nobody really knew a lot about it. It got slammed. We got slammed here. There was death in the air, and I live here. I'm here now. I lost four people I know quite well that didn't make it through the virus. It was just in the air. You just sat around your house or your backyard once it warmed up and just didn't want to go anywhere. You were nervous about it. But the governor showed leadership and the people bought into it. And one of the reasons I suppose people bought into it is because there was a lot of death. Mm-hmm. And when they bought into it, they're serious about it. And to this day, this state's in good shape, real good shape, but they're all wearing masks. Everybody's doing their part and they don't care. I don't care if they're Republican or Democrat or independent or whatever, wear the thing, do the right thing. And you can experience a little bit of freedom again for a change.
With John Davidson of the Rangers, look, picking a Stanley Cup champion in a normal year is a perilous task at best. Yeah. Trying to do it in this environment is probably, it's not impossible, but you can get lucky. You can pick a number 1 to 16, and maybe it's not much more scientific than that. But is there a team that kind of jumps out at you and you look at and say,
Philadelphia has played very well down the stretch and they've started great. Look like they're on a mission. Tampa Bay's gotten a lot more size than what they had last season when Columbus knocked them out. I don't know who will win that series. That's going to be a good series, I think. I might be missing somebody, but. And then on the other side, you know, St. Louis has that pedigree they won, so they're going to put up a fight. Colorado and Vegas, to me, are two pretty good hockey clubs out there. Uh-huh. Really good hockey clubs. And that'll be fun to watch. So there's so much parity. See how the injuries go as we march along. See who can handle the bubbles. I mean, they're going to be, when you start getting into the Final Four, you're 6-8 weeks in a bubble. Yep. You're going to, what's going to happen here? And I know the teams in Toronto are going to fly out to Edmonton. My suggestion would be, and I've read some part of it a while ago, but once they get out there and there's four teams left, allow the families to come by and to figure something out. Let them go to a golf course where they've closed down the course, but you can go play and get some air and get some sun and do things like that. So you wonder down the road how mentally it's going to be for everybody. I know if you're winning and you see that prize, that may be enough, but there should be a little bit more just for the mental anguish of it all.
I actually think it'll be an advantage to the team coming from the East because of the change of climate.
Yeah.
Because they leave Toronto and actually go somewhere new as opposed to staying in the Edmonton bubble.
Yeah, it could be stimulating just to have something fresh and new, a new hotel room that you go to every day.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, a new place for food, things along those lines.
You talked about St. Louis. You talked about Columbus. It's been over a year now since you rejoined the Rangers. What was it like to watch one of your old teams that you helped build in the Blues win the Cup last year? Yeah. And what's it like to watch Columbus beat the Leafs and give Tampa trouble?
I was really happy for the Blues. It's a great sports city. There's probably 60 alumni that live there, and the city loves them. And the 20 players that played in that last game that dressed for the championship game, we were, when I was there, and I was just a part of it, I mean, Larry Poe, a whole bunch of them, there were 10 of them of the 20 we brought in. And we're there. So I was pretty happy about that. Even though it was a number of years ago, to see Alex Pietrangelo become captain, that was the highest, the best numbered pick that we had during our 7 years there. And he was taken number 4 overall. And we actually sent him back to junior twice, which was uncomfortable. But I think in all, we did the right thing. He became captain and won a cup. And I'm really happy for him, amongst others, trading for Alex Steen. Things along those lines. And then moving to Columbus, that's a good hockey club. And they've taken the personality of their coach. There's no quit in them. They have some terrific players. I know they don't have great offense, but it's a little better than you think. Dubois has popped. He is a moose. He's a good player. And then on the back end, the top two defensemen, Jones and Werenski, proud of Jarmo Kekalainen making the trade to get him, even though Johansson went to Nashville and he became a Stanley Cup finalist. Seth Jones for us is what we needed. Dubois, they needed a center there, and he's starting to pop. So I love their depth. They've drafted well, and I have a lot of vested interest there. So I care about how they do.
Well, one of the intriguing things too about this is I never thought I'd be the least bit interested in watching hockey in the middle of the summer. And of course, yeah, and, you know, then as the playoffs stretched on, I mean, we are all old enough to remember when the playoffs were over, early May, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now it's, June, at least.
Well, the Leafs won on May the 2nd, Bob. The Leafs won the Stanley Cup on May the 2nd.
67, pardon me, yes.
Oh, yeah,
They also won in 64, though, just for the record.
Yeah. The guy who played on the team that has only won once in the last 80 years has given the Leaf fans grief. You know, it's great.
You know, one guy that was there is Pete Stemkowski.
Sure.
And he still lives here in New York out on Long Island, and I get texts all the time from him. He does a lot of radio work for the Rangers, and we get on the road, and if you run into him having a sociable, man, can he tell Leaf stories. They are hilarious. This guy's a treasure with the stories that he can tell.
Well, you probably know this. When Stemkowski was playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs, he had a part-time job as a DJ with CKFH, Foster Hewitt's station, the flagship station of the Leafs network, which is CJCL now. But so he had that gift of gab right from day one.
Oh, yeah. He could talk the wheels off a Greyhound. There's no question about that. The tough part for him is when we were playing with the Rangers, he was the number 2 center in behind Phil Esposito. Phil had the 4 or 5 minute shifts, So Stemmer would sit on the bench holding his stick like this and not playing. He'd put on 20 pounds every winter just by not playing.
Yeah. I'd like to see a coach right now try and get Esposito off the ice in less than 3 or 4 minutes. A 40-second shift, he'd say, screw off.
Yeah, he still holds the record of the most shots in a season, and it was less than 82 games. I think it's 550. Nobody's come close to that. You think of Ovechkin and all those shots?
Yeah.
Nobody close. 550, all from the slot with his snapshots. He was some terrific hockey player.
It's great to see you, and you've always been very kind to us, and we John and I really appreciate it. And
anytime.
Safe health, and do a little homework and see if you can figure out who that number one draft choice will be.
I appreciate that.
Samalfachuk is the guy that I like, but you can pick whoever you want.
How about you, Shannon? Who do you like?
Tell you what, that Quinton Byfield's pretty good hockey player.
Okay, I'll take it. I'll take it to the office.
Oh, yeah, appreciate it. Absolutely, yeah.
Hey, I enjoyed it, guys.
Based on all the publicity that the National Hockey League gave young Alexei Lafreniere on Monday, I don't think you have many choices.
Yeah, you may not. You may not. But you'll make the right decision, I'm quite sure.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
Thanks, pal.
Guys.
See you soon, I hope.
Stay safe, everybody.
You too. That's it for us. John and I will be back in a day or two. See ya.